We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. AFA aims to evangelize the lost and disciple the believer. We aim to strengthen biblical marriages and equip parents to raise godly children.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview. The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, before we get to the debate analysis and everything from last night, today is 9/11, which of course is the anniversary of the absolute tragic day in American history in 2001, which, if you can believe, it is, if my math is right, is 24 years ago and or 23 years ago, but over 20 years ago. See, I can't do math this early in the morning, but it is an event that now we have young adults who don't actually remember. I mean, I am old enough and I can do that much math to remember exactly where I was on 9/11 and how much different the world was before that event took place, and then all of the things that have happened after, and the importance, of course, of teaching civics and the blessings of liberty to our nation. So we want to take a moment first and talk about 9/11, talk about the direction of where our country is going, especially with our young people, before we get to the debate analysis. So joining me now is Professor Nicholas Giordano, who is a Campus Reform Higher Education Fellow and a professor of political science. And so good morning, Nicholas. And you know, it seems like today students are really disconnected to the realities of 9/11.
Good morning, Jenna, and that's very true. I've been in the classroom for nearly 20 years. I first began teaching in 2006, and when 9/11 would roll around and I would do a lesson on it, you saw the emotional attachment of the students. You saw that some of them lost family and friends, that they all remembered exactly where they were that day. And then a few years ago, I began to notice a profound change. Students were still interested in the lesson, but you didn't see that same emotional engagement that I saw in years prior, and it dawned on me that many of these students were born in a post-9/11 world. They don't remember a pre-9/11 America. They don't understand how the world profoundly changed, and they view 9/11 the same way I may view the JFK assassination or Pearl Harbor. But there's also another thing going on, and it's the anti-Americanism that has festered within our education system. You know, when we look at K through 12 and college campuses, we've seen anti-American sentiment rise. We've seen America be classified as a racist, bigoted, and oppressive country. Over 4,500 school districts have adopted elements of the 1619 Project, something that was built on a false premise that America is only built on the basis of slavery. And so you have a student body where many of them actually are against the United States. They have disdain for the United States. I mean, people should be worried that 30% of Gen Zers believe that Osama bin Laden had the right ideas. That's staggering. We reported it at Campus Forum, where we've also been on top of all the pro-Hamas protests on college campuses nationwide, where you have students chanting and handing out pamphlets that say, "Death to America. Death to Western civilization." We just put out a report a few weeks ago about a student group talking about the eradication of Western civilization. That's what they're fighting for. And it really is a shame when we look 23 years later and how never forget has been forgotten.
Yeah, and it really is such a tragedy when you look at young people who have inherited the blessings of liberty, but then are not understanding why they need to carry that forward, and that it doesn't just, I mean, this country doesn't just have freedom because that's the default position, and yet they're advocating for the transformation of America. And so, you know, connecting this back to 9/11 and that particular event, what do you think is the most important thing that young people who haven't, who don't have that in their consciousness of having experienced that event themselves, and you don't have a memory of when that actually occurred, what should they be taking away from that history?
Well, they should be taking away the bravery and sacrifice. You know, I mean, this is what shows American exceptionalism is on that day. You had thousands of people, from first responders to ordinary citizens, to control this ended and tried to help out their fellow citizens. They did their patriotic duty. They put their lives at risk, and so many lost their lives by putting their lives at risk. And then subsequently, how many people ended up enlisting in our military, going to serve overseas to take on the terrorists in their home turfs rather than here in America? We had, you know, over 9,000 soldiers coming home in flag-draped coffins, tens of thousands of wounded, life-altering on a daily basis. It's really remarkable. I think that's the most important takeaway. You know, since 9/11, the death toll continues to rise of those who are dying from 9/11-related illnesses. We're talking well over 5,000 people dying from 9/11 illnesses. And the younger generation needs to understand that freedom is not free, that we have to fight for our liberties, that it takes sacrifice to preserve it, that there's a sense of selflessness amongst Americans, that when the time comes, we help each other out, that we recognize the greatness of America as a country, not just government, because people tend to confuse government and America, but the American ideals, the American values, the American identity that has done so much more good in this world than bad. And we need to start taking that away and doing our patriotic duty and regain the love of country.
Yeah, so well said. And I'm speaking with a Professor Nicholas Giordano, who's a Campus Reform Higher Education Fellow and a Professor of Political Science at Suffolk Community College in New York. And so we've talked previously about, you know, the contrast between your community college versus, you know, some of these elite campuses that, you know, have a lot more of these protests going on, and a lot of the more indoctrinated Marxist students, because you have a lot of, you know, non-traditional students or people who are actually working and they understand what taxes means. They're not, you know, just paying on their parents' credit card, that kind of thing. But for the students that you interact with, do you think that they actually do understand this? And where is the breakdown in terms of the students that are genuinely interested in carrying America's exceptionalism forward versus what some of these Ivy League institutions are doing in terms of indoctrination?
Well, I think my students do understand the importance and relevance of an event like 9/11. And the reason being is because my college is located 45 minutes outside of New York City, and so we're not far away. And many of them still have family members that do speak about 9/11. They come from families that are 9/11 families. We have a lot of cops and firefighters in our area. And so my student body is different than most. But as far as the four-year university campuses go, all we've seen is the groupthink mentality, where it's bash America all day long, and it's students, it's professors, where they don't have that connection to 9/11. And I'll be interested to see how these pro-Hamas protests develop today and see what they're saying on these campuses. Are they celebrating 9/11 attacks? That's going to be something interesting to pay attention to. The four-year universities have been infected with the groupthink mentality, where everything is oppression, where, you know, people are lumped into groups, they become very tribal. You have professors and students engaging in the anti-Americanism, anti-Semitism that we're seeing. And unfortunately, we had over 670 University of North Carolina professors last year sign a petition stating that they don't want to make American government and civics a required subject for all college majors. And it shows how little the student body actually knows about the country, knows about the principles that define the United States, like liberty and freedom, understands important concepts like limited government. There's no appreciation. And if you don't know these things, how can you go out there and actually defend them? And I think that's the position that we're in today, that you have groups where some despise America because of what they've been taught, but others can't properly defend the United States because they haven't been taught about America.
Yeah, I think that is so well said, and exactly the contrast that we're also seeing in this election. When we get in the next segments about the debate analysis, that it is a worldview contrast. And if you don't understand the history of America and what it is that you are actually protecting, then you aren't prepared to defend it. And of course, you're going to fall for all of these ideologies like Kamala Harris just saying, oh, we're about joy. And I mean, that's not a policy. That's not a philosophy. That's not a government. It's just a campaign. And so hopefully, for the next generation, they don't just buy into all of these platitudes from the left and the actually dangerous worldview and indoctrination that you're talking about, Professor Giordano. And I hope for, you know, everyone who is listening, we take it upon ourselves to not only educate our children, encourage our college students to go to a campus that they're actually being taught to think for themselves, and then also even as adults, that we're engaging in civics and we understand how to defend the worldview that our great country was founded upon, and the ideal and ideas and the worldview of America, which is the self-evident truth that our rights come from God, our creator, not our government, and we have to preserve and protect them. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. So let's get to the debate last night. And okay, so I think all of us went into this, first of all, not really knowing what to expect. I was actually asked by a couple of reporters yesterday heading into the debate, like, so what do we think? Any predictions? And, you know, I'm texting some friends, all of this. And my assessment going into this was I have no idea what version of Kamala Harris is she going to come out and be all joy and sparkle and nothing. Is she going to be you know, pretend to be this kind of, you know, rigid person? Is she going to be super word salad? And then is Trump going to be sort of the stoic, passive figure that we saw in the last debate of Biden? Or is he going to be a repeat of some of the 2020 debates where he was a lot more argumentative? And what about the moderators, right? So we go into this, and it was just painful. It was overall, I think everybody lost, and I think everybody could have done better articulating their positions. Kamala Harris actually came out on the stage and introduced herself to Trump, which I just laughed at because I'm like, okay, so you're just showing that he has a lot more name recognition than you. I mean, instead of like, good to see you, Mr. Former President, because, you know, the person who is known better is usually the one that doesn't have to introduce themselves, and Trump didn't. So that was funny. And she was very nervous and awkward initially. Her first response was very canned and rehearsed, and she fumbled it right out of the gate. And it wouldn't have mattered what the moderators asked her. She would have had the same first canned response. And so that wasn't great, but she got her footing pretty quickly and ended up appearing very poised throughout the rest of the debate. She was very calm. She got a little bit passionate, I would say, about a few things. There were a few comments on social media that her responses to the abortion topics were her most passionate, which is just downright evil, quite frankly. But then on by contrast, Donald Trump just did not perform well. This was a bad debate for him because he allowed it to be a referendum on his administration and on his responses to not even just COVID, but like the whole January 6th narrative, the whole, I mean, everything. Some of even his recent comments on Kamala Harris's race. So he got very defensive and he allowed Kamala Harris and the moderators, by the way, who we'll get to in a second, Kamala Harris to get under his skin. And he became very defensive. And even he didn't call her names or anything. So give him props for that. But he did have some of those snarky remarks. Like she said something to him when her mic was turned off and he was like, you know, please stop. I'm speaking. He's like, does that sound familiar? Like it just seemed low and totally unnecessary. But the worst part of it was that he just rambled. She was overprepared, in my opinion, to say things without saying anything. And he just kind of rambled. And I was sitting there listening, thinking, if I hadn't heard Trump speak quite a lot and didn't already sort of know where his policies are, and I think every reasonable American knows what his administration was, and they also know what Biden's 4 years have been, wouldn't really get anything new from anything that he was saying. And his one job in this debate, if I'm on his campaign, right, I would say that his one job was to show that Kamala Harris has been part of the Biden administration and that she has failed to do, she and Biden together have failed to do in the last 4 years, everything she promised that she would do in the next 4 years. And instead, she contrasted herself and said, well, I'm not Biden, pretty effectively, and then started pointing out that none of his former chiefs of staff, his own former vice president, and all of these other people are not supporting him. They think he's a danger to democracy, you know, all of these things. And then he started defending that instead of consistently keeping her on the defense. So I thought that was a net loss for him. But his closing statement was actually the strongest. And I think if the entire debate had been as strong as his closing statement, then he would have prevailed, even though it really was a 3-on-1. Because when he was on the debate stage, the moderators, so let's talk about them for a second, they were the biggest losers. ABC and this debate was horrible. And I never thought I would say that I wish this had been on CNN, but I actually do, because the last debate that was moderated with Biden and Trump between Dana Bash and Jake Tapper as the moderators, nobody was talking about them except to say they did good. The moderators on ABC, David Meir and Lindsay Davis, I think is her last name, Lindsay, they inserted themselves and they did this so-called live fact checking. They interrupted Trump and they said, well, we just want to fact check this. And they were going back and forth. At one point, David Meir actually tried to fact check Trump's intent and his tone of sarcasm. How do you fact check somebody's tone when he's like, well, I didn't get that was sarcasm. Well, nobody asked you, David. Like, and it was so intended to try to tell the audience of the world, but primarily the American people, the people who are going to vote in November, that he thinks that Trump is lying. That is inappropriate for a moderator. And my position on the whole thing is, even if both of the candidates are lying or there are fact checks that are appropriate, let the voters and the viewers do that. The moderators should not be inserting themselves either way, because their fact checks could be wrong, and they're not there to debate the candidates. They are there to moderate the debate. If Kamala Harris wants to fact check Donald Trump, fine, have at it. If Donald Trump wants to fact check Kamala Harris, have at it. But it is not the job of the moderators. They inserted themselves and fact checked Donald Trump probably, and I lost count. I mean, it was probably at least 5 times and very persistently. And they kept following up with questions saying, well, you didn't answer this question. Not one time in the entire time that was about an hour and 45 minutes did they do that to Kamala Harris. That is not refereeing. That is not being fair. That is not being unbiased. That is not being a moderator. That is inserting yourself into the debate. So that was incredibly unfair. And Donald Trump was absolutely right about that in some of his responses. But again, his closing statement, if this had been what he kept hammering the entire debate, I think we would have had an entirely different perspective and I think outcome of this debate. So this was his closing statement. Cut one.
Just started by saying she's going to do this, she's going to do that, she's going to do all these wonderful things. Why hasn't she done it? She's been there for 3.5 years. They've had 3.5 years to fix the border. They've had 3.5 years to create jobs and all the things we talked about. Why hasn't she done it? She should leave right now, go down to that beautiful White House, go to the Capitol, get everyone together and do the things you want to do, but you haven't done it and you won't do it because you believe in things that the American people don't believe in. You believe in things like, we're not going to frack, we're not going to take fossil fuel, we're not going to do things that are going to make this country strong, whether you like it or not. Germany tried that, and within 1 year, they were back to building normal energy plants. We're not ready for it. We can't sacrifice our country for the sake of bad vision. But I just ask one simple question. Why didn't she do it? We're a failing nation. We're a nation that's in serious decline. We're being laughed at all over the world. All over the world, they're laughing. I know the leaders very well. They're coming to see me. They call me. We're laughed at all over the world. They don't understand what happened to us as a nation. We're not a leader. We don't have any idea what's going on. We have wars going on in the Middle East. We have wars going on with Russia and Ukraine. We're going to end up in a third world war, and it'll be a war like no other because of nuclear weapons, the power of weaponry. I rebuilt our entire military. She gave a lot of it away to the Taliban. She gave it to Afghanistan. What these people have done to our country, and maybe toughest of all, is allowing millions of people to come into our country. Many of them are criminals, and they're destroying our country. The worst president, the worst vice president in the history of our country.
That was very strong. And unfortunately, that was an hour and 45 minutes into the broadcast where I would love to see the views of how many people were actually watching in the beginning compared to how many people stuck through it until that point, other than, you know, people like me who unfortunately had to watch the entire thing because I wanted to comment on it this morning, and that is part of my job. But if I was just a regular voter and an average citizen that had tuned into the debate as much as I am engaged in politics and interested in it, if I did not have to get up this morning and comment on this, I would have been done before they took their first break about an hour in. I would have said, okay, I've seen enough. I see how this is going, and I'm not learning anything. Because this was really the question, and one of the things that I posted in kind of my live X posting through the debate last night, and you're always welcome to follow along on my X posts for things like this. And I don't think we're going to get another debate, honestly. I would be very surprised with less than 60 days to go if we see another debate. I just said, did anybody really learn anything from this? Because what I would have loved to see, and what I said yesterday, I wish that, and I was hoping that we would have seen, is Donald Trump actually pressing her on communism and Marxism. I mean, I think he mentioned Marxism once, but it was kind of in the middle of this sort of rambling kind of Trumpian kind of rhetoric, and it really didn't land. And for the average person who is seeing Kamala Harris as someone who is just this perhaps reasonable Obama-like Democrat, I mean, you have to remember there aren't like the majority of our audience. I mean, I'm speaking mostly to the AFR audience who agrees that Kamala Harris's policy positions are very dangerous to the ones that aren't necessarily vague. And what she stands for is communism and Marxism. And we disagree with that policy because our policy positions are predicated on truth and a biblical worldview and genuine freedom. And Trump did not define that well enough. He didn't contrast that well enough and didn't point out throughout the debate just how dangerous she would be in terms of the policy, and talk about his own accomplishments in a better sense, because everything that Kamala Harris threw at him was, of course, during the last year of his presidency and the outcome of COVID. And that's what the Democrats are trying to pin as Trump's legacy. And I think they've done that fairly effectively for the people who aren't paying as close of attention to say, you know, look, you left office, and we had the worst economy, we had the lowest jobs, we had, you know, all of these things that were going on. Well, they're totally forgetting, purposefully, I think, the 3 years that he was in office without this, you know, so-called worldwide pandemic that, I mean, look at the other countries that were facing even worse, if you can imagine it, worse lockdowns and responses and so forth, that had been decimated even worse than the United States. And he didn't really talk about that contrast. And I think that he is reluctant and hesitant and maybe even fearful to go into the whole COVID analysis because he knows that the majority of his base disagree with the vaccine and that's controversial. But in that setting and that context, he should have pushed back. And I don't know, you know, what his debate prep was. I mean, we've seen that Tulsi Gabbard was helping him and some of these things, but it came in, he came in more like it was just a regular media interview than a debate. And what he should have done, in my opinion, if he really wanted to show the contrast between his worldview of government, definition of freedom, and the conservative view, and I mean, he's a populist, not really conservative, and as everybody knows, I think there are policy positions he has shifted too far to the left, but he's more to the right than Kamala Harris is, right? I mean, that's why he's the Republican candidate, she's the Democrat candidate, he's the freedom candidate, she's the communist candidate. Those are just their policy positions. And that contrast was not seen enough. What it came out to, ultimately, to me, what it, as the average viewer, and I was kind of trying to position, okay, if I'm just listening to this debate only, what came out was that she was the more poised, solid, let's move forward, let's turn the page, let's get back, I am for freedom. And she even said that in terms of freedom of choice, like, I'm for freedom, you are for restrictions. Where he came off as very rambling and really incoherent and very, very, very defensive. And so a couple of responses from a few people that you may know on social media, like Ali Bastucky, who I really respect. She's a good friend. She said this, both are true. ABC moderators were absolutely disgraceful, totally unabashed in their bias. Also, Trump took all the bait handed to him and didn't even come close to hitting Kamala where it really hurts. Even with bad moderators, he had the opportunity. Best case, he moves on from this completely and pretends it didn't happen, which obviously his campaign is not doing because they had a prepared statement that Trump absolutely crushed Kamala and good night, Kamala, if you've been receiving all of the text messages that I have this morning. That was their canned response to the debate, was that he absolutely crushed it. And that's just that's not what happened. And a user named Tammy Clark said this, my thoughts on the debate. She has mastered the art of discrediting the witness as an attorney, is a professional gaslighter, as they all are, and is projecting a savior complex while bold-faced lying. Sadly, people are so informed and stupid that they'll fall for it. I think that's accurate. And then, unfortunately, I agree with this assessment from Matt Walsh over at Daily Wire. My debate analysis won't make anyone happy. I think Kamala was weak and nervous, especially early. She came off as phony and rehearsed the rest of the way. But Trump missed a lot of opportunities to land a blow, rambled too much, took the bait repeatedly throughout. I don't think this debate moves the needle much for either candidate. And well, that I totally agree with. I'm not sure that it doesn't move the needle in the sense that I think some people are very concerned with what Kamala Harris actually said, I think very well, one of her first lines, where we need to move forward, turn the page, where he is focused in the past, we're not going back to the past. And part of that is because he was responding to the bait that was given to him, that he was focused on the past and defending some of his past comments, his past actions. The moderators asked him repeatedly about his response to January 6th. And instead of just saying, that's in the past, can we look forward to what's going to happen in a second administration? And having those kind of deflection responses, he took the bait. And so a lot of the responses and a lot of his time was focused on being defensive, which they set him up for. The moderators absolutely set him up for. They asked him those kinds of questions that helped out Kamala Harris while she got a lot of softball questions. I mean, it was, I think it was Steve Dace who posted something like, you know, the ABC moderator's next question is, Madam Vice President, do you agree with us that Trump is a danger to democracy? How would you respond to that? And, you know, I mean, it was so blatantly one-sided. But for people who are looking at the two candidates, that was helpful to Harris. I mean, there was an implicit bias, but I think the over-under is that it propped her up more. And Trump did not do what I hoped he would, which was to contrast ultimately the worldview. So the bottom line here is that we need to pray for this election. We need to pray for this country and pray for people to actually think through the issues, think through the policies, and not allow the media shaping and the narrative to project onto defining Trump or even defining Kamala Harris how they prefer, because they are setting her up to be the second term of Obama. And, you know, the next 8 years of Obama's, if 8 years weren't enough, and, you know, the joy candidate, the poise that, you know, she has plans. We haven't known what they were, and she just posted them a day before the debate. And then Trump is this danger to democracy. He's an unhinged lunatic. You know, I mean, that was the contrast that they wanted. And I think that ABC and Kamala Harris's campaign were unfortunately effective at that projection. And so so Kamala, and I just want to play a couple of last clips here. I mean, this is where Kamala Harris was fairly good at positioning this. And she said, Trump left us with the worst attack on democracy. This is cut two.
Donald Trump left us the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War.
Ironic that she said that a day before today, which is 9/11. I mean, that's just, again, she's trying to paint him as an unhinged lunatic, as someone who is unfit for office. He's a danger. Don't let him back in. And he didn't call her out on that. I mean, his response to that would be, you know, what about Afghanistan and the withdrawal? What about... and she was asked about that and, of course, deflected. And he should have said, tomorrow is 9/11. What about our soldiers? Did you just completely forget about that? I mean, he didn't have some of those quippy responses that I've come to expect from Trump. The one thing that I thought he said very well, though, was that she's stealing so much policy from him, like on the border, and some of her campaign promises, which I don't think she'll ever intend to follow through on, because like he said in his closing statement, she'd be doing it with Biden already. But he said she's stealing so much from him that he was going to send her a MAGA hat. This is cut three.
And policies like they have, I don't say her because she has no policy. Everything that she believed 3 years ago and 4 years ago is out the window. She's going to my philosophy now. In fact, I was going to send her a MAGA hat. She's gone to my philosophy. But if she ever got elected, she'd change it.
That was a great line. And those kinds of things, he should have done more. And he should have said she has no plans. And he should have, again, said everything that he said in his closing statement. He should have kept hammering that and kept her on the defensive, because it appeared in this debate like he is the incumbent and that he had to defend the last 4 years of his record while she's the brand new opposition challenger that's coming in with a new vision and new ideas. And somehow we're all forgetting that supposedly Biden is the president right now. I mean, and that was what was bizarre about the entire thing. And he allowed it. And he was on the defensive. And the over-under to me, as much as the poll that I posted said about 82% of people, and this is about 2,000 people who have contributed so far, maybe a little under. Oh, no, this is now up to 17,000. And as I'm looking, all right, that jumped up since I last checked. 86% said Trump won. Harris is only at 14%. But I think that shows more who follows my social media. Unfortunately, I think if this moves the needle at all, it's a little bit more for Harris. But ABC overall were the biggest losers. So we'll be right back with more with Walker Wildman's opinion on the debate when we come right back here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And we are still talking about the debate, which was not great last night. But the over-under is that ABC was the biggest loser and Trump was on the defensive. And Kamala Harris, while very shaky and nervous, appeared pretty poised. But our good friend Steve Dace just posted this. If I'm the Trump campaign, I disregard talking debate performance and talk debate substance. There was a consistent theme last night. Kamala Harris showed no regard for the suffering of the American people and has no plan to fix what she caused the last 4 years. I am taking clips of her repeatedly showing this through the debate and hammering them in my messaging. Never forget these metaphysical certitudes. When elections are about issues, Republicans win. When elections are about personalities, Democrats win. And whichever side does a better job messaging the future always wins. And I agree with Steve that this has to be about the future, and Trump should have pushed that instead of this being in the past and staying in the past and appearing as the incumbent with Kamala being the bright, shiny new candidate. But let's bring on Walker Wildman, who is the vice president of the American Family Association here and with AFA Action as well, host of At the Core here on American Family Radio Network each and every afternoon. So, Walker, good morning. And what did you think overall? Were you as disappointed as I was that there wasn't as much of the communism-Marxism contrast and putting Kamala Harris solely in that seat with her worldview?
Yeah, the whole thing was rigged, and ABC, I think I counted at least 8 to 10 times of them fact-checking and talking over President Trump, and not one time did they do such with Kamala Harris. But here's what I feel like on this Wednesday morning. I feel like a repeated abuse victim. The Republican Party has been repeatedly abused by the mainstream media when it comes to these debates. And they're rigged every single time. So I'm like the abuse victim that has finally said enough is enough. I don't think President Trump should participate in one more debate, and I don't care who it's with, Newsmax, Fox News, or CNN, no more darn debates. These things are rigged every single time, and it's time to just hit the campaign trail and let Kamala Harris's campaign fall apart. Her staff turnover rate is like 96%. She can't even keep staffers. Everything that Kamala Harris touches burns and falls apart. So I think the Trump campaign should not waste time with these two-hour debates. By the way, what are we learning from these debates, really? I mean, these are gotcha moments. These are social media clip moments. But in the grand scheme of things, there really wasn't much substance talked about last night. It was all very 40,000 level feet flyover talk, non-specific talk, and nobody was really held accountable. So I'm just fed up with the repeated abuse that comes from these debates. And if I'm the Trump campaign, I'm just hanging it up. I'm hitting the campaign trail. I'm doing boots on the ground. I'm doing voter turnout, but I am not showing up to one of these debates that waste 2 hours of everybody's evening.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that's very well put, that it seems like Republicans are repeated abuse victims. But the thing is that they keep going back and they keep, I mean, Trump agreed to the forum of ABC when it was Biden, there was supposed to be a Fox News debate. And this is where his campaign always gives in to the perception of the media and didn't want to seem afraid to confront her on the debate stage and all that kind of stuff. But he should have done this ahead of the debate and said, no, or just walked off and said, and if he had actually called off the moderators and said, I'm sorry, you have not fact checked her once. And you're actually, when David Muir actually said, I didn't get your sarcasm in that, so I'm going to fact check you there. Something like that. I mean, that was just blatantly ridiculous. He should have called out right there and said, I'm sorry, if you want to have a fair forum, we can do this later. I mean, then the whole conversation would have been about ABC, but he walks into it, and now I agree with you. I don't think there's going to be another debate, but then the perception is going to be he was on the defensive and Kamala was the better candidate. And so they walked into this, and now here we are. So, I mean, when will the Republican Party learn about the media?
Yeah, this is the difference between Trump 2016 and Trump 2024. In 2016, he was kind of off the cuff, running it like an entrepreneur, willing to listen to other people. But now he's got these career political class pollsters and campaigners running his campaign, and they think that showing up to this rigged ABC debate with Kamala Harris, who's a completely installed fraudulent candidate, is going to work out good for him. I mean, the writing was on the wall. The first thing that should have been done is as soon as they installed Kamala Harris, which is what happened, and they booted Biden to the side, Trump should have said, I'm not participating in this rigged system. This is an undemocratic, illegitimate system where the power brokers are installing their candidate of choice, and I'm not participating in it. I'm participating in the election on November 5th. And that could have controlled the complete messaging and put the Democrats on defense. So something's going to have to change the next 55-plus days, because this traditional campaigning and playing to the Democrats and the media's narrative is not going to work. And furthermore, this constant taking the bait, I mean, on Project 2025, I mean, how long are we going to talk about January 6th and Project 2025? President Trump has disavowed that thing, even though I don't think he should have, by the way, but he's disowned it like 20 times in the last 3 weeks, and they keep bringing it up. So when you enter their environment, what do you expect? I mean, this repeated abuse should be expected. So we've just got to flee and find another path forward.
So well said, and I wish that his campaign had listened to you ahead of the debate. And for all of his debate prep, what I was saying in the last segment as well, and I agree with you, is that he was so on the defensive, and I framed it this way and would love to get your take. Walker Wildman is my special guest this morning, the vice president here at the American Family Association, that the entire debate was framed as if Trump was the incumbent and he has to defend his record of his last 4 years, where Kamala is this bright new shiny candidate with a new way forward, a new path forward, and let's just forget that Biden is the current sitting president. I mean, it was framed that way, and she was able to distance herself instead of she having to defend her own record over the last 4 years, and he just seemed totally unprepared for that.
Yeah, her not answering questions was a repeated theme, and President Trump should he did a few times. He did press her on that, but of course she wouldn't answer the question. But yeah, she's been in charge for 4 years, her and Biden, which is really effectively Kamala Harris, because we don't even know where Biden is. So Kamala Harris has been in charge for the last 4 years, and this is the disaster that we get. So why aren't you fixing the problems that you say we have? And the flip-flopping, I mean, this was a completely new Kamala Harris. She's a California Democrat, San Francisco Democrat, was called the most liberal U.S. senator when she was in the U.S. Senate, even more liberal than Bernie Sanders. So all of that should have been highlighted. But nonetheless, this stuff's just not going to be talked about if you're entering an environment of ABC, CNN, and MSNBC. So how many years are we down the road? I mean, this goes back to pre-Trump. This isn't just a Trump thing. This goes back to Romney and McCain, as bad as they were. Those debates were rigged, too. So this is like, we just got to get out of this vicious cycle of abuse by the media and just find a new path forward. So that means no more debates. And can I say it again? No more debates.
And I'll repeat it. No more debates. And I don't think that that they're going to have one anyway, because Kamala did an adequate enough performance with the assistance of the two moderators that I think that her campaign is going to be satisfied with that. And so neither side, for different reasons, will want to entertain that. But let's also talk then about what may have actually moved the needle last night. Immediately following the debate, all of the Swifties, and I'm talking about Taylor Swift's fans, got an endorsement from her. She posted on her Instagram page a photo of herself with her cat and said this: like many of you, I watched the debate tonight. If you haven't already, now is a great time to do your research on the issues at hand and the stances these candidates take on the topics that matter to you the most. As a voter, I make sure to watch and read everything I can about their proposed policies and plans for the country. So, you know, you'd think that this is going then in a different direction if that's true. But then she said, recently I was made aware of the AI of me falsely endorsing Donald Trump's presidential run, and was posted to his website. She goes on to say, the simplest way to combat misinformation is with the truth. I will be casting my vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in the 2024 presidential election. And she said, I goes on to say why, and it's LGBTQ rights, IVF, a woman's right to her own body. So all of these social issues. And she said, I've done my research. I've made my choice. So this endorsement is a big deal. I mean, she has even more than Trump and Kamala's arenas. The Swifties love her. Do you think that this moves the needle?
Well, it might move the needle, but I don't know people looking to Taylor Swift for election advice. And if they are, they're probably not politically engaged anyway. So I don't know how much it moves the needle. It might move it some. But it's more reflective of the state that we're in America, where, you know, people are looking to Taylor Swift on who to vote for. So this is the personality politics that we're in. And this is people may say, well, how do you change that? The personality politics that we're in, you don't engage it. And then that's what, when you show up at a debate where it's all about sound bites and personality, then you're legitimizing the personality politics that we're in. So policy is what has to be talked about. But this is really part of a larger problem. And I'll guarantee you, if you ask Taylor Swift, tell me, you know, the number one policy that Kamala Harris has passed in the last 4 years that's made your life better. She'll be just like the rest of the Democrats on the street that don't have an answer, because they're really not up to speed on the issues of the day. But policy needs to be talked about. I mean, this is concerning, but I think it's indicative of our culture, because if you kind of do man on the street interviews, people know the right talking points, right? That they're in favor of abortion and they're for saving democracy. But you're like, if you start asking secondary questions that get really deeper, they don't really have an answer. That's because we have a very shallow populace and a very shallow electorate. So we've got a lot of educating to do. But this personality politics and Taylor Swift, playing to Taylor Swift, is really indicative of where we are as a society. And President Trump, he hasn't courted the traditional voters that have put him over the finish line in past elections, one being evangelicals. I mean, the evangelical outreach has been basically non-existent with the campaign. I mean, the campaign has murmured that they don't need the evangelicals because they've already got their vote in the bag, which is not a very good message to be sending. So President Trump has a lot of voting blocks that he really is yet to energize this cycle. So there's 55-plus days left, and President Trump needs to be energizing every single voting block at his disposal.
He absolutely does. And, you know, and I have a little bit different take on the Taylor Swift endorsement, because, I mean, even this was posted 9 hours ago and has almost 8 million likes so far. And, you know, and this, of course, could be from across the world, not necessarily the voting base. But because people in this society are so culturally and entertainment focused, then when somebody like their idol, Taylor Swift, in the music industry portends to say that, you know, she's researched it, even though she doesn't articulate anything other than, you know, the vague platitudes toward the social issues, she's like, I've done my research, then they think, oh, well, I trust her because she's not a political spokesperson. She's not a somebody who's in the campaign. She's just, you know, a regular person who is a great American, and we like her. And so in that way, I think that it does actually show how much the voting populace across America is so culture and entertainment driven. And this is why it is a good thing that Trump has courted some of the entertainment world's views and endorsements, because that actually does help in a sense. So I think the Trump campaign needs to push back on this and maybe even ask her those questions that you just asked, Walker, because it's absolutely true that if you ask Democrats, you know, what policy has the Biden-Harris administration actually implemented that has made your life better, they'll go back to things like abortion and those types of things that seem to be their only message. I mean, Kamala Harris last night, the only thing she really got passionate about, unfortunately, was abortion, but she refused to say if she would limit abortion in the 7th, 8th, or 9th trimester. I thought that was absolutely disqualifying.
Yeah, and here's what I'm saying about, I don't think that the Taylor Swift thing is really going to move the needle, because how many people were like undecided before yesterday? I mean, are there really that many people undecided in our country? I mean, these are two known commodities. So I think the Taylor Swift stuff does create energy and momentum for the left. But as far as how many new voters were garnered by the Swift endorsement, probably not that many. I mean, are like college girls going, I'm going to register to vote now, but I haven't been in politics since then. I mean, I think it's about going viral and building momentum. But as far as moving the electorate needle, I'm not sure how much, maybe a percentage point or two. But on the untapped voting base with President Trump, this is the problem. If you try to cater and do the same strategy as the left, which is, you know, go personality, influencer driven, There's like 40 million evangelical Christians that aren't voting every election cycle. So, like, why is that not being tapped? I mean, I think there's just so much low-hanging fruit. That's my point. There's so much low-hanging fruit that we don't have to adopt the strategies of the left to turn out the vote. We just need to get Christians engaged and get them to the ballot box. 40 million evangelicals are sitting on the sidelines.
And we don't have to engage in these rigged debates. So, absolutely. Well, Walker Wildman, really appreciate your insightful analysis. Thanks so much. And we'll continue to talk about the debate and where we go from here for the election in November and the worldview contrast. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.